Welcome to the Morbid Anatomy Transmission. I'm your host, Molly McBride Jacobson. When I first came into contact with the Morbid Anatomy Museum, I wasn't sure what to expect out of their events. Would they be freak show performances, seances, live autopsies? As I came to find out, while these sorts of things do happen at the Morbid Anatomy, there are also lots of academic discussions. The fun kind, though, where you're left with both questions and answers. This Thursday, February 25th, we'll see the first in a monthly series of dialogues called the Morbid Academy series. In this episode, I interview its host, Mitch Horowitz. He's an editor at Penguin Books, a historian of alternative spirituality, author of Occult America and One Simple Idea, a history of the positive thinking movement. He writes about the esoteric, the paranormal, and the occult for the New York Times, Salon, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and more. His conversations at the museum will be asking serious questions of paranormal research and weird history. In this episode, we discuss just a little bit of that. UFOs, killer clowns, ghost ships, haunted houses, Ouija boards, seances, cryptids, and possession, just to name a few.
The Morbid Academy series is a monthly series of dialogues where I get together with thought leaders who investigate the paranormal, the unknown, the unaccepted, and we have a serious and fun conversation about what's really going on in the field. The first one is the evening of Thursday, February 25th, with historian Robert Damon Schneck, who is probably one of the most literate and rigorous historians writing today, who takes seriously stories of things that go bump in the night, people who disappear, reappear, spontaneously combust, strange lights in the sky, and other things that have made an impact on millions of lives. And what I love about Robert, and really this first talk embodies the purpose of the series, is that he is skeptical without being cynical. He's a real questioner, and he knows that when some huge number of people are reporting some strange event, whether it's a UFO or an alien abduction or a haunted house that you shouldn't sleep in at night, something is happening. And he starts from there. And that's going to be the nature of all the dialogues. We're going to be talking about ESP research, life after death, ghosts, unexplained disappearances, events that occurred, but we just don't understand what's behind them.
And are you looking at a particular time period, or is it just all throughout history?
All throughout history, yeah. From antiquity up through the present. For example, one of the people I'll be talking to is journalist Stacy Horn, who wrote a wonderful book called Unbelievable about ESP research. Stacy's a very mainstream person. She's done lots of reporting for NPR. She is a celebrated literary journalist, widely respected, widely reviewed writer. And Stacy got interested in the parapsychology research that was going on at Duke University from the 1930s through the 1980s under the leadership of a scientist named J.B. Rhine, who's one of my personal heroes. And Stacy is a thoughtful, practical, intensively curious person who never thought of hanging a label on herself like a believer in the paranormal, but she came to find that there's this vast story of legitimate clinical ESP research. ESP is extrasensory perception. It was a term that was popularized in the early 1930s by J.B. Rhine, who was a clinical researcher at Duke University. Some people run from the term ESP today because they think it sounds too woo-woo, too paranormal, too occult. They'll use different terms like remote viewing or psi research, or people will refer to themselves as a intuitive or something like that. But I believe in hanging on to the old terms, and people write off this research because they are mostly reading about it from a polemical perspective that seeks to dismiss and discredit the idea that any kind of boogity-boogity research, you know, that went on in a Duke laboratory for a generation had to be the equivalent of Ghostbusters. It was just nonsense. But it wasn't nonsense. It was research that left us with incredibly tantalizing questions about the non-physical properties of the intellect and the human mind, about the presence of non-physical existence. I try to use terms, and I will use terms during our dialogues, like occult, ESP, New Age, very freely, because I don't think we should lose those terms to the critics. A lot of people use those terms in a negative way. They almost use them as epithets to describe something that's unrealistic or unserious, and that's not my attitude at all. And I don't think we should give up those terms to the critics.
So you used the expression non-cynical skeptic earlier. Mm-hmm. And I guess I think it's interesting because I'm seeing that a lot. I follow a lot of different like paranormal activity podcasts and cryptozoology podcasts. Mm-hmm. And people always sort of like to say, you know, I'm interested, but I'm a skeptic.
Yeah.
And so why do you think people so frequently dedicate themselves to things like this when they are themselves skeptical?
Yeah. Some of the critics of parapsychology, for example, will complain that people like me always call themselves a skeptic, and they think I don't deserve the title of skeptic because I'm propagating a belief in something. And of course, people like me will turn around and look at them and say, well, nor do they deserve the title of skeptic because they're speaking from a position of hardened certainty. They're not questioning. They're propagating from their own perspective. I view that personally as cynicism. And I think that words like skepticism and open-minded, if they're used at all, should be used very carefully. Now, for example, the hardcore critics who would maintain that parapsychology and research into the paranormal is just fantasy, is just nonsense, they will begin every sentence with saying, I'm open-minded, but. I don't think anyone should apply the term open-minded to themselves, because we all like to see ourselves as open-minded. Nobody says, well, I'm a bigot, but still I have something useful to say. You know, that term has become almost useless, and I'm concerned that the term skeptic is becoming almost useless because everybody sees it as a title that they want to defensively embrace. But when I say about Stacy that she's a skeptic who's not cynical, what I mean is that she's a genuine questioner. She's asking herself, what happened here? What was this? It's too simple. It's too pat. It's too shallow to say, well, it was just this parapsychology research has just been 80 years of fantasy and fraud and imagination. That doesn't cover all the bases. It just doesn't. So she'll proceed from a position of questioning, but she won't feel like she has any party line that she has to protect or defend.
Yeah. So you and the other guest at this event, Robert Damon Schneck, yep, are both described as Fortean historians.
I suppose so.
Could you tell a story of who Charles Fort is?
Sure. The word Fortean may not be familiar to everybody, but it is a widely used term, and it's based on the name of historian Charles Fort, who died in 1932. Fort was a wonderfully peculiar, curious intellect who, in the early 20th century, became fascinated with all these strange reports that were appearing in newspapers all over the United States and Europe of strange vehicles that could fly, ghost ships, monsters, frogs falling from the sky, all kinds of things that science dismissed as complete nonsense, but that seemed to keep coming up. And he believed that Victorian scientists didn't have all the answers, and that in fact, Victorian scientists sometimes employed skepticism as a weapon to kind of beat back certain things for which science couldn't account. So Charles Fort, as a historian, decided that he would chronicle the strange, the unknown, the unaccepted. And his first book in 1919 as a historian was called The Book of the Damned. And by damned, he meant the unaccepted, the unexplained, the misunderstood, the excluded. So sometimes today we'll say somebody is a Fortean historian if they are becoming a historian of the excluded. So Robert Damon Schneck, who I think is the greatest Fortean historian writing today, would, for example, look at a situation where a group of boys vanished from Newark, New Jersey, and the crime was never solved. And he's trying to understand what were the strange and anomalous circumstances that led to this vanishing. He will look at reports that have been going on since the 1980s of killer clowns stalking American cities. So what's happening? How do we understand this? And his most frightening story, in my opinion, was an encounter that three graduate students in Wisconsin had with a Ouija board in 1990, where they felt they had summoned up some sort of a serial killer that was stalking them. And it's a terrifying story, and that story came to the attention of a very famous Hollywood producer by the name of Harvey Weinstein, who decided that this would be the next great American monster movie. And the movie people renamed it The Bye Bye Man. That was the name of the serial killer. I have to warn your listeners, don't think of the name The Bye Bye Man, because if you think of the name, he homes in on you and starts to make his way to where you live. So please, this may be very bad advice, maybe delivered in such a way that sort of paints us all into a corner, but don't think of the name The Bye Bye Man.
Well, now I can't help it.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. And you call yourself a skeptic, as we talked about before. Is there anything that you believe in, maybe in spite of yourself?
I call myself a believing historian, and I feel the need to be very upfront about that. Because if I hide from that, or if I try to convince people otherwise, I'm kind of playing politics. The fact is, I am a believer in things that go bump in the night. Now, 99% of such cases are perfect nonsense, but 1% is where you find the unexplained and where you start digging. A friend of mine has an expression, which is something only has to be a little bit true in order to change everything. So I call myself a believing historian because I'm not trying to hide my cards from anybody.
Sure. Do you have a favorite historical anomaly that keeps you up at night?
Oh, that's a really, really interesting question. Well, I'm fascinated with the Ouija board. I write a lot about the Ouija board in my book, Occult America, and I write a lot about it and talk about it. I'm sure we'll be covering it probably at several of the Morbid Academy dialogues. The Ouija board's a tricky case because I remember when I was a little kid thinking, how can something that is packaged like a toy, shrink-wrapped, and has a barcode stamped on it have any occult properties? And it seemed nonsensical to me. But again and again, I would encounter people or read stories of people who had had the most terrifying experiences using a Ouija board. For example, they might be getting communications that first are helpful, telling them where they lost their car keys, and then become threatening and then become scary. And there have been so many weird stories about the Ouija board, and even the legitimate parapsychological community has kind of put off a lot of these stories. I have never been in a pea soup, vomiting, bed levitating kind of situation, but I have used the Ouija board with intelligent people, and we're consciously aware of what's going on, making a concerted effort to not fall into the trap of some sort of self-delusion, self-deception, and the pointer is moving. The pointer is moving. It's a simple kinetic experience as much as the chair that I'm currently seated in. So what's going on? And I constantly have this fascination that draws me back again and again and again to the Ouija board, partly because it is a toy and partly because it is such a persistent source of truly frightening things. And I had to tell an interviewer recently, because interviewers, you know, kind of mainstream folk are always looking for me to say, like, you know, well, in times of economic depression, people use the Ouija board, or in times of this, times of that, and that all has certain truth to it. But there's also truth in saying that I cannot categorically exclude the metaphysical from certain episodes or instances. What I stand for is not throwing open the door to the assumption that, well, it must be Captain Howdy who's moving it, but rather including that as one question among others. I want people to be dissatisfied with pat answers. So for me, the Ouija board is kind of the, you know, the flame that my inner moth keeps circling around.
Why do you think it is that people, because, I mean, and I don't mean to sound like this is other people, like I am 100%, first off, I'm very gullible, and second, I you know, I'm really into the idea that there are forces outside of ourselves working. And maybe that things we call magic could just be science we don't understand yet. Mm-hmm. But do you think that people feel that way and are interested in things like paranormal phenomena like UFOs and cryptozoology and that sort of thing because it's reassuring?
It is reassuring in the sense that we don't want to believe that we are just vessels sort of set adrift on this sea, and after a certain period we cease to be. People also do want to strive, want to feel that there is more to life than where my next beer is coming from. You know, Stacey Horn, who's the participant in one of our dialogues, makes the case very brilliantly that it's also a wish to believe in love. In a way, when people are trying to reach to the unknown, they want to feel that physical demise is perhaps not the end, that we don't lose all contact with people we love. One of the reasons people are interested in the paranormal is because it also might be true. It might be exactly what's happening. You know, I was just talking with a colleague today about why the self-help book, Think and Grow Rich, has remained so popular. I happen to be a big fan of that book. It was first published in 1937. It's read by people everywhere, not just entrepreneurs, but artists, doctors, all kinds of people. And my contention is that it's remained popular because it works. I can describe experiences from my own life. I meet people from many different walks of life who speak in the most beautiful, serious tones about how that book helped turn their life around at a certain point. So sometimes the fascination exists because something is true. And we have a whole generation of journalists and academics who will look at the occult because they want something fun to write about around Halloween, or in the case of academics, they want to evaluate the social background that produces people's belief in what they consider the unreal, but they cut off their own sense of study by excluding the question that, well, the believer might be correct. Isn't that possible that the believer might be correct? Just, you know, have we disproved that? We don't want to usher in a new age of superstition. We don't want to usher in a new age of delusional thought. And those are very, very serious things. But I would say suspending a question to say that materialist science might not cover all the bases is to me a legitimate tool of investigation. So I would have to say that one of the reasons why people believe in the paranormal is that it might be true.
That's it for this transmission. The first Morbid Academy will be Thursday, February 25th at 7 p.m. sharp. Mitch will be talking with Robert Damon Schneck, author of The President's Vampire and a fellow Fordian historian. Next month's guest will be Stacey Horn, whom you heard a little bit about in this podcast. She and Mitch will be discussing paranormal psychology and ESP, namely everything you don't know about it. Other events coming up include I Am Dandy, The Return of the Elegant Gentleman, and the Morbid Anatomy's Festival of Arcane Knowledge. For tickets, go to morbidanatomymuseum.org. For questions, email info@morbidanatomymuseum.org. And also, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Morbid Anatomy transmission and leave a review if you're so moved. Thanks. Today's last words are those of occultist magician Aleister Crowley. He said, "I am confound."